This morning will be a little bit unique in, I don't know, my approach to this part of our service usually, but also in what I'm going to ask of you. Because our Advent passage, the passage that we've been in the last 4 weeks together, it requires us to use our imaginations, drawing up images of a pregnant woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet. And then the image of the great red dragon. Thinking about the Christmas story in these ways, it expands our minds. And so I'm going to ask you this morning to keep imagining with me. I want to tell our story again, but in a way that maybe helps us to engage it again and more fully. And so this is how I'd like to start. I'd like for you to imagine or picture the most epic or memorable concert that you've been to. What concert comes to mind? Anybody want to share what concert they're thinking of? Paul McCartney. War.
Damian Marley.
Anyone else? Concert that you've been to? Yeah.
Van Halen.
Okay.
Steve Miller Band.
So as I was preparing for this, the concert that I went to in my mind was the Trans-Siberian Orchestra that I saw at the SAP Center in San Jose. Quick story, has nothing to do with my sermon this morning, but if you know anything about the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, this is going to offend you deeply. Jane fell asleep during the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. I don't know how it's possible. It's a gift, but it happened. So that has nothing to do with anything else I'm going to say, but I just thought you should know that. Okay, so you've got your concert venue in mind. At any great concert, right, you have certain expectations for how the show is going to go. Generally, first, an opening act comes out to warm up the crowd. And then they finish and they bow and they receive the audience thanks, only to step aside for the headliner. And then the real star of the night comes forward, the singer, performer, or band that everyone came for is on. And people go crazy because the real show is beginning. Now, with this concert venue in your mind, I want you to think about the story that we've been telling all month. You heard Carrie reread part of it for us this morning, the story of the real war on Christmas. 3 weeks ago, we encountered the pregnant woman clothed with the sun, and she came out on stage, and she reminded us of all of God's people through history, starting with Eve all the way down through Mary, who have been waiting for God to come, for God to fulfill his promises, and her patience in waiting is a sight to behold. It's a performance in and of itself, and it could fill volumes. She played her part, and then she took her bow. But all along, the woman had only one role. She was the opener, the setup act leading to the star of the show. And so now, the woman has bowed and she has stepped back, clearing the stage for the headliner. And now we expect the honored guest to come out. But before he can take the stage, we find a different performer swooping out into the spotlight. A great dragon takes the stage. He had no role in the production as it was designed. And the director has kicked him out of the venue repeatedly, but here he is now, front and center with all eyes on him, taking over the stage, seizing the main event as his own. He's come to keep the star from getting his due. He's come to steal the spotlight from the one that everyone has come to see. Here's the thing. The dragon puts on a pretty darn good show. It turns out the dragon can sing and dance. He's up there telling jokes like he's a stand-up comedian. He's even brought out a couple of furry animal friends to help him. His beasts start juggling with fire and jumping through hoops. But then they really start to ramp up the spectacle. They start to do magic tricks. But I'm not talking magic like an illusionist. Like, we're talking signs and wonders. They call up a member of the audience, and they heal her. It's a show unlike anything anyone has seen, and the crowd is mesmerized. So mesmerized that they actually forget that they were there for a different show. The audience at this point doesn't even care that the act that they came for is nowhere to be found. This feels like a fine substitute, except something is happening. Back, way back, behind the dragon, behind his dancing beasts, almost hidden behind all of the production. There, in a corner of the stage, nearly hidden behind a back curtain, the woman who had stepped back has begun to give birth. A son, a male child, is born. Right in the middle of all of the dragon's spectacle, the real star of the show enters the stage in the most unspectacular way. I mean, babies are born every day. What's another one? Meanwhile, the dragon is healing people and giving everyone in the audience a new car. What's a fairly ordinary child got that these entertainers don't? Besides, even if the audience were to begin to clamor for the male child, like, what could this male child do for the audience that could even come close to entertaining them and satisfying them the way that this dragon has? And yet, there are a few in the audience who have noticed what's going on near the back of the stage. And they are curious about this male child being born. And they begin to eye him. And there's something about him that they just can't put their finger on. I mean, he's mostly unremarkable. And yet, even with all of the performance going on, a few in the crowd are able to look past the dragon and his beasts, and they gaze on the child. They adore him, even. The dragon, so caught up in his performance and capturing the hearts and the minds of his audience, apparently misses the birth of the child. He hadn't even noticed the woman giving birth behind him. He still hasn't seen this male child, but now he has this really uncomfortable feeling as he's singing and dancing. He's looking out to the audience, and he notices something odd. Like, while the crowd is filled with these happy, stupid smirks, there are also some faces that look very different. Faces that look more than happy. Like, they're glowing. Radiant. But they don't seem to be watching him. It's like they're looking right through the show. And so the dragon follows their gaze, and that's when he sees him. The dragon sees the male child, and he knows exactly who he is. The dragon assumes the male child has come to kick him off the stage and to steal his glory. But the dragon wants to show off his great power, and so he dives toward the child to devour him. But just like that, the child disappears. And so, like Wile E. Coyote, the dragon smashes into the back wall. And most of the audience just think that they're watching a bit of slapstick, and they laugh even louder. Some wonder if they've just seen some small child or something back there, but they just assume it's all part of the show. But the audience is filled with people who definitely had seen the child. But more than that, people who beheld the child. And they can't get away from the fact that there's something about him. And this is what they needed to be sure. When the dragon went after him, they saw the truth. They saw the dragon's true stripes. He is a monster who tried to devour this child. He is not a star to be adored. And so just like that, those who could now see clearly decided they were done with the show. They wanted more of the child. But the dragon isn't done. His humiliation causes him to lash out. Quickly, in the corner, he catches sight of the woman who gave birth to the male child, and she becomes his newest target. And he charges toward the woman, and just as he's sure he's got her in his grasp, in his clutches, she is gone as well. Like the male child, she too has been rescued. The great red dragon turns the darkest shade of red you could possibly imagine. Humiliated even further, his anger turns to rage. But in the audience, there's only one group who can see the dragon as he is, who can see his rage as rage. It's those who beheld the beauty of the male child. But the rest of the crowd is enraptured by the performance of a lifetime. In fact, the angrier the dragon gets, the funnier he seems to get. The angrier the dragon gets, the more seductive his song, the more alluring his act, the more enticing his entire shtick becomes. Those in the crowd who never saw the child, they missed him being born. They never saw him standing off to the side. All they know is this show that's going on in front of them, and it's an amazing show. In fact, so good that they've forgotten that they were even waiting for a different show. And so the dragon leans into that. He convinces them, no, this is the show that you were made for. This is the show you've always wanted. He is the one who deserves all of their praise and attention and adoration. He tells them, convinces them. But again, the people who beheld the male child, they will never be the same. There was just something about this male child, something so truly pure and powerful. And yet the child seemed to have no need to be proud about his purity, and he had no need to show off his power. In fact, those who saw him, they knew somehow that this child could wipe the stage of the dragon if he wanted to. And so what was it about this child that was so captivating? Because, I mean, he didn't force anyone in the audience to turn to him. He didn't force anyone to notice him or to come to him. He refused to push the dragon from the stage. He refused to overpower the dragon. He refused to outperform the dragon. And yet, they knew. They seemed to know from a place they couldn't describe that he had come for them. Like in the depths of their spirit, they knew he was the one that they were made for. The people who saw the male child knew that they had come into contact with real love for the first time. In his presence, they were loved, and they had known what it was to love. And this child's love made the dragon that much more disgusting. And think about the dragon. He had no love for his audience. He was merely using them. He wanted their affection for his own gain, for his own sense of self-worth. While the child didn't just love them, this child was love, is love. And he showed it as he humbly and quietly waited for people to notice him, to behold him. But now he's gone, and the woman is gone as well. And all that was left was a huge auditorium with a dragon and his dancing beasts and a crowd made up of two kinds of people. One, an attentive audience eating up every moment of the dragon's show. And two, a disoriented people who have seen the truth. They've seen the child. They've seen who the dragon really is. They know that there is nothing for them here. They know that they won't give the dragon what he wants. They know that they need to leave. And so they work up the courage to make their way for the doors. But the dragon isn't finished yet. See, he may have the attention of most of the audience, but he's willing to do whatever it takes to win back the rest of them. And so one of the beasts actually takes the form of a child, like the male child. The likeness is pretty remarkable. Well, the other beast imitates the child, his words, his actions. The beasts are incredible performers, award-winning. And they convince a few of the people that the child that they had seen never actually left. It was all part of the show. Here the child is, back on the stage, waiting for their adoration. The dragon even tells the crowd he will join them in worshiping the child. But not all of the people can be tricked. Several of them understand too well what this dragon is up to. They know what they saw. They know what the dragon is. He is the deceiver of the whole audience. This is the final straw, and they decided they cannot be a part of it. See, because it's one thing. If the dragon wants to try to make people choose him over the child, but for the dragon to pretend to be the child, For him to be so desperate for praise that he takes away the choice, letting people think that they are praising the child while they are actually praising him, this is just obscene. And those who know the truth know that they will not adore this performer on the stage. They will not marvel at his power, as powerful as he seems to be. They will not be in awe of his words, as wise as he seems to be. They will not worship this dragon, even if he looks and sounds like the male child that they long for. They know that they must find the male child so that they can worship him. This is what they were made for. And so they get up and they begin to make their way to the exit. And that's when the dragon sends one of his beasts to kill the people who are trying to leave. It's utterly horrific. They are slaughtered like lambs. Their blood flows down the aisles. And you wouldn't believe it, but much of the audience actually erupts with applause and laughter. Violence is hilarious to them, peak entertainment. Sure, these are people, but they probably deserve to die. Oh, how satisfying and entertaining to relish in their deaths. And yet, while many in the audience were cheering, something else was happening at the same time. The people who had seen the male child and originally wanted to follow him, but had since been deceived into turning back to the show, they noticed the others getting up. They noticed those who were doing what they had originally wanted to do. And they saw them heading toward the exits. And as they turned their heads and as they watched these men and women reject the dragon's song and dance, they saw again the male child. Now, they didn't actually see the male child, but it was the radiant beauty of the male child. It was shining brightly from every single one of the men and women who were heading for the doors. And once again, they were reminded of the beauty that had once captivated them. It was again the child's love. Only a powerful love could motivate someone to give up their lives like this. Awakened once again from the dragon's deception, seeing the male child's glory in the deaths of his followers, they too, having once been deceived, now rise from their seats and they begin to make their way to the exits. But none of this is limited to just the people who originally saw the birth of the male child, saw the child standing off to the side and taken up to God. But now, others began to notice as well. Not everyone, not too many, but enough. At first, they're sort of shocked by the people getting up to leave. Who in the world would walk out of a show like this? Do they know what they're about to miss? But the thought's enough to make them wonder, what am I watching? And so they look a bit more closely at the men and women moving toward the exits, and their eyes begin to open. They begin to notice that as glittered and as glamorous as the show on stage appears, there is something even brighter shining from the men and women that are heading to the exits. They shine full of glorious and radiant light. These men and women, they also overflow with love for the male child, loving not their lives, even unto death. And this is the truly amazing part of what they begin to see. These men and women moving toward the exits, precisely in their deaths, seemed more alive than anyone or anything in the entire auditorium. As the beast that the dragon set on the people once again tears the people to pieces, there are some who can no longer cheer. Now they are only filled with disgust. Seeing beauty and light and love and life in these people, they now see the dragon for the first time as he truly is. He's not just a fraud, deceiving the whole world. He is truly evil, warring against the male child and any who would follow him. Still, seeing what the dragon has done to those who get out of their seats and walk toward the door, there are new men and women whose eyes are being opened and who are being freshly captivated by the male child. And they too rise as their brothers and sisters before them. They too reject the dragon. They refuse to worship him any longer. And so they head to the door, seeking the male child. And the family grows. Last week, Katie introduced us to these people, reflecting the character of the male child. These people become known as the offspring of the woman because they are like brothers and sisters of the male child. And they love him and follow him and they worship him even unto death. The book of Revelation tells us that it's through the work of Jesus and the testimony of his saints that the dragon is defeated. Isn't it amazing that Jesus doesn't fight for stage time with the dragon? He seems to give the stage over to the dragon. And Jesus doesn't ask us to remove the dragon from the stage for him. He just asks us to seek him and to follow him. Jesus comes into the world, a world that is captivated with the dragon and his ways. And Jesus comes offering love, great love for us. And then he suffers and he dies to show us just how deep that love is. And then he's drawn up to the Father. And it is this love and this love alone that is strong enough to compel us to turn away from the dragon. It is this love that shows us what the dragon really is. It's this love that asks us to stop worshiping the dragon and to come instead adore Christ the Lord. Can we see in this male child the glory of God? If not, if we just see a baby, if we just see some additional feature of the big show that we are having too much fun, enjoy, we will stay in our seats and we will just keep worshiping the dragon by our presence. If this story teaches us anything, it is that worshiping the dragon is always the easiest and most natural way for us to get through life. The dragon has perfectly ordered life to help us coast through without noticing the male child or his offspring. However, the male child seems especially talented at showing up and standing alongside, saying, "Here I am. Come and follow me." If we can see the child, really see him and behold him, we will stand up. And we will walk toward the exit. And we will be done with the dragon. And we will be ready to join the male child at his table and in his life. This is what the real war on Christmas really is. A battle between who we will worship. Will we worship the dragon? Or will we worship the male child? The male child invites us today to come and to enjoy his love and his fellowship. And if our servers would come forward,